But, you know, it was, it happened. And then we didn't actually practice. That was fucking even more depressing.
Yeah, but, that kind of sucked.
So Craven Moorhead started to practice 2 weeks ago, and it was a fucking fail. Like, we thought we could use Zoom because they've kind of set it up now so you could use Zoom, supposedly. But the latency was so bad. Like, it was horrendous. Like, yeah, we use it here and it's fine. Like, there's very little latency, but it was all. So then by the time, like, my onboard speakers didn't work on my computer. And then I apparently rewired the Ampeg wrong. I still don't know how the fuck I did that. And so everything was a fucking fail. So we spent 2 hours kind of looking at each other, trying to figure out what the fuck had went wrong. And we'd have already done this before.
Yeah, we would have needed, well, I would have needed to have been in a time machine to travel back on a loop every second to stay in time with you guys.
So bad. I think we got a half song out in 2.5 hours. But hey, it sounded good what we did.
Yeah.
We jumped right back on that horse.
Definitely. Yeah. I think you're probably like, shut the fuck up. Why are you talking?
Shut the fuck up. This is fucking magic.
Contain words or statements of obscene, pornographic.
Thank you,
or
Amanda, for
character.
Stepping up and doing our
You have been warned.
But oh yeah, it's that time. This is in honor of our new t-shirt design.
Yes. Love that.
Which is pretty fucking badass. So we opened up a store on Threadless so you can buy shit. I got some secret hidden chlamydia stuff. It's going to be awesome.
Nice.
It is like they got t-shirt designed by the, he did like the Sub-Zero shirts and shit, I'm trying to think. He's been doing a lot of art for like that kind of like East Coast hardcore band. So they had this guy do fucking Judge Dredd getting decapitated by Dale, the drummer who was not a drummer, but wear the ski mask. So it's magical.
Nice.
So that should be happening soon. But yeah.
Yeah, cool.
And plus I like the Thundercats.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you, were you into Thundercats as a kid or were you already kind of too old for them?
No, I was into, well, not for toys. Like, I was into them, but not for toys. Yeah, it wasn't. They were like knockoff He-Man figures, weren't they?
No, they weren't. Not really.
I kind of thought they were like big, oversized, muscular like him, but I think I'm wrong.
They were like a little bit taller than He-Man figures. They were probably more like 6-ish to 7-inch tall figures. And they, I'd say they were like the body styles of the figures were a little more like standard shape, whereas the He-Man mm-hmm. kind of like had weird bent arms and legs.
Yeah. So, I mean, the cartoon was awesome. Like, I really dug except for fucking Snarf. But besides that, I dug that cartoon. I was good with cartoons until I had kids. Apparently, that's not true either. I think the divorce rid me of cartoons. Like, all of a sudden, I was like, I can't watch cartoon right now. It's weird. It's like a mindset. It's like me learning to drink coffee when I have my mental breakdown. It's this weird shit that happens to you. Like, could never even look or taste or stand a smell that had mental breakdown. All of a sudden, coffee was the greatest thing in the world. I do not know where the fuck it comes from.
I don't. Shit just happens like that. I don't know. Like, I was at the grocery store the other day, and we were in, like, the vegetable and fruit section, and I was looking at bananas, and I used to love bananas. Bananas were like my favorite fruit for like forever. And now I don't even, I don't like them at all. Just like I stopped eating them. And like now really? I kind of think they're gross.
Does it go in stages? Like I've found that with certain things, like that I'll go like peanuts. I'll go like for a while, like months eating peanuts. And then I'll go for another 6 months without eating. Like it just comes in waves.
Yeah, I don't know. With bananas, I'm not sure because I'm definitely in an anti-banana phase right now. And that just started maybe, oh man, probably not even a year ago. I was probably still eating bananas like a year ago. So it's definitely within like 6 months. I don't know even how it started. I just kind of didn't like have bananas for a while. And then I think I had one and I was just like, I don't like bananas anymore. And we just stopped buying them.
Did it feel weird
to see them the other day and know I don't like them or to stop buying them?
I wanted to go off the rails, but Gavin and Andy aren't here, so I'll keep it family friendly.
I want to go back to the toy thing a little bit because I had this interesting little thought a few days ago where you know, I follow a lot of toy stuff on Instagram and whatever, like random shit will pop up for me. And there's this one guy that I follow his Instagram and he posts nothing but just 80s G.I. Joe stuff. Like the swivel arm battle grip era G.I. Joes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know exactly. That was in my wheelhouse.
But what's interesting is he's like really good about he posts stuff from his own collection and he also posts stuff that other people have or just even just whatever, just he'll grab shit off the internet, whatever. And he's really good about always putting the release date or release year of whatever he posts, like if it's a vehicle or a certain figure or whatever. And what's really kind of trippy is thinking about like the year of some of these toys, and I definitely had some of these particular things, and like some of them were released in years where I'm like, I can't believe that I was still like playing with toys then. When I think back on where I was at that time, and I was like, man, it's like 1986 to like 88 for me was such a weird time. And I didn't even ever have this thought until this guy started posting dates with these particular G.I. Joe toys. I was like, man, it was weird. Like between the ages of 10 and 12, I had such a weird like evolution of what was going on in my life. It's like I was morphing into what would become like my teenage years activities, but was still doing my childhood stuff simultaneously. So it's like I was still had toys that I definitely was actively playing with, but then also had a skateboard and also was like getting into listening to like music and stuff. So it's just weird to see pictures of these toys that I had and seeing the year and be like, whoa, that's crazy that I had that toy. And I remember like playing with that particular figure or with that toy, but there was all this other shit going on at the same time. So it's just weird to kind of think about this 2 year span that thinking back on it in that time felt really long, but it was actually this really, really short moment of time.
I think mine was like 7th grade to 9th grade. Like by the time I hit 9th, like it had completely shedded. So the whole seeing it time and like it went from toys, play. Then it was like skateboard came in and said like Christmas of 7th grade. And then all of a sudden it was like it started like they started like crossfading each other. Like the toys started like disappearing and, you know, skateboards and music. And It had started, but it was, you're right, it was like there was like a 2 year period. I kind of think mine even happened quicker though. Like there was a point where it just like shut off.
Yeah.
Where I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna go skate or something. I'm not gonna sit here and play with my GI.
Well, and I was thinking a lot about this and I was trying to tie it together with what was happening that pushed me away completely from toys and stuff. And then girls. Well, I don't even think it was that.
Chicks don't find toys.
Like, cool. I think it was peer related though, because I was thinking about
when I got,
and we've talked about this on here before, but it's probably like this for a lot of people in different areas of the country or whatever, but everybody in our area kind of had like their own unique elementary school. And then we all got bussed into the same middle school for the most part. So you went from having like this core group of 20, 30 kids in your class all through elementary school till you go to middle school. And all of a sudden there's like 80 new kids you're going to meet and like hang out with and do stuff with. So I think, cause I was thinking right. Like when I went into sixth grade, the Christmas of sixth grade definitely aligned with this 2 year span where I was definitely still asking for toys for Christmas and for my birthday. So it's like weird to think about. I was in sixth grade still asking for toys, but I was trying to think back and I was like, you know what? I think I was still playing with toys, but it wasn't something I really like talked about anymore in school. So it's like, I was like, if I talk about this, maybe I'll get made fun of, but I still do like toys and I still want to play with them, but I can't really talk about it. So I think by the time seventh grade came, it's like, I was so fully immersed into skateboarding and toys just kind of fell by the wayside a little bit of, I just wasn't interested anymore. And also like kind of scared to like talk about that. I still played with toys in sixth grade.
Yeah. I think there was definitely a point like middle school kind of broke that out. And I think I got away with like the first like year, but then it was like, the more you started talking and I think, you know, was it transportation based almost? Cause now all of a sudden I had friends outside of where I was or my core group that I had to get there if we were going to hang out and do anything. I don't think I ever played toys with like any of my friends, like besides you. Like, I don't think they're like, hey, come play G.I. Jones with me. You know, they're like out of the people that we still converse and talk to, I don't think besides you that would have been it.
Yeah.
So, and I think there was we hit a stage, but I think mine was more because, you know, all that time you took to play with everybody, you know, now it's like, well, I got a fucking bike to their house and we're going to go do something stupid, or I'm going to ride my skateboard to somebody's house. So I think for me, it felt like, I think it becomes more of a transportation thing. Well, not a transportation, but, you know, widening your surroundings and kind of your friend base. And that kind of pushed you out a little
bit. Yeah.
I mean, for me, I mean, looking back on it, I would see that would be the logic behind it. I can't see fucking rolling with my fucking Transformers on my back on my skateboard. Yeah. Like, you know?
Although I would definitely do that now. like, don't describe my life right now.
Like, I have problems, like, even with, like, I still have like identification issue when it comes to like with even when we do ghost hunting, like the fact that like Amanda and I went last week or 2 weeks ago and the guy that hooked it up for us, like he's all in and can speak freely and like he has no problem with it. But I still worry about the stigma attached to it. For some reason, even though, I mean, that's what we do and we love doing it. And we've had fairly good success pulling shit out of the air. Like it's like he's in and I have a hard time. Like Amanda's much better than I am. Very secure in what we're doing, where I'm still like, eh.
Gotcha.
And I think that would be part of that whole toy thought too. It's like, yeah, they're sharing that shit with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, You just haven't reached the point that I guess her and I have reached of just like literally not giving a fuck about what anybody thinks.
Well, it's but it even like we went to lunch or breakfast today, wherever, because I don't eat before 12, so lunch. And the guy was talking about the shirt I was wearing or the my pullover because it had the Banditos logo on it. And he was like, that place is awesome, blah, blah, blah. And I just let them go. And Amanda's like, he worked on it. He's the one that came up with all the murals and stuff. Like, that's, it's just, it's not in my profile to kind of identify with stuff sometimes, I guess. I don't know. It's weird. I just let him go. And it's like, yeah, it's a cool place. And that's like, that's where I'm at. Like, I don't
want to. You didn't want to chat him up about, you know, your involvement and stuff.
Yeah. I think it's a, it's the whole, it, to me, it's kind of feels like the same way as not saying we go, like I, yeah, see, I have a hard time saying it out loud that we go ghost hunting. Like it's, it, there's something upstairs in the screws that don't always turn properly or will allow me to do it and feel comfortable saying it. How about that? Who knows? This has been a very deep, we started probably an hour ago. And we've had very deep conversations, none of which are podcast worthy. But we do. I'm going to bring it up. I'm doing it. So I do need to acknowledge the passing of a really good friend. Snake, if you're out there listening. It's fucking sad that you're gone. So Blake, he was in Pig Destroyer. He was a sampler guy. But before he was in Pig Destroyer, like he and I had played in a band together, like early 90s or mid 90s, I guess. I can't remember, like 90s. 7-10 split. Then it became Perestroika, and then I left because I couldn't deal with the, once again, the Perestroika just got to me some reason. It made us more serious than the band started out to be. But he and I were inseparable for the whatever, however long it went until I got married. Actually, even after I got married, we were inseparable for a long time. So it's sad to see somebody pass. And from what I understand, he didn't even pass from the cancer, passed from a heart attack.
Oh, really?
Which is probably, yeah, he went to the hospital with pneumonia and then had a heart attack while he was there and they couldn't revive.
Oh shit.
It. So, but it's sad because he was posting up about all the issues he was having with whatever insurance he was going through, not giving him, allowing him to get the test he felt that he needed. So there's a whole bunch of shit there that, you know, way deeper than me, but you will be missed. And now when you hear Frat Guy on the episode that you put together, where you played all the old songs, or maybe you can throw it. We'll throw it in at the end of this one. You'll just have to send it to me. We can think of Blake because I believe he wrote that one. Because there was, I believe so. I mean, he was awesome. I'm actually doing a stained glass piece now to, what do you want to say, memorialize our friendship. Aww. I'm doing the fucking snake medallion from Conan, because we were both fucking huge Conan the Barbarian fans. Like, that was one of our favorite, like, that was one of the things we so had in common. And it wasn't everybody's ball of wax. So it was like one of the things. And I think he actually has it tattooed or had it tattooed on him. So I don't know. Like, we had fallen well away from each other for the last 15, 20 years since definitely before the kids. So we'll say 20, 25 years. But when Amanda got me back on Instagram or got me onto Instagram, he was one of the first people that connected and we started talking back and forth. Just we had a really good bond. I mean, there was a part where we had separated because like he was so deep into the music and I, you know, had kids and shit to support at some point. So I went job wise and he stayed with the music, which is awesome. And, you know, we tried to get him to actually do the Craven Moorhead's show in Baltimore, but he hadn't been well for a while and they hadn't practiced. So, and that was with the Zealot AD band. Like, I were trying to get them to be our headliner, you know, but he just, they weren't ready to come back, or he wasn't ready to come back yet. But so, miss you, dude. That's where I'm at with it.
It was definitely shocking when that news came down. I wasn't expecting to hear that news that day. So that was not cool, and definitely sad.
I mean, everybody, it was great to see the fucking Dwarves, Pat, post about him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Pig Destroyer post. There was a ton of places. I think even the Autobar did a thing, like celebrating his life. He was a fixture in Baltimore. I mean, I think Daybreak, Hate Beat.
Yeah.
Which is fucking awesome. Dude,
like, honestly, not to like try to like sound like a cool guy right now, but I mean, I have a good many records of things that he was on that it's like shit that people probably don't maybe even know about anymore, but the people who do know what's up would be like hella jealous of like some of the shit I have that he's on. Like, I showed you that Daybreak Nautical Hyper Blast 12 inch I have. I actually have the Hate Beak 7 inch. Yeah, so like that Hate Beak, like, honestly, as much as it like might be kind of a sad thing in a way, but that Hate Beat might be probably the thing he like is most known for.
And it was funny, as I think it was conceptual. Like, the last conversation I had with him prior to getting back in touch was the Hate Beat was just starting out. Like, he was telling me about it, I was laughing my ass off. I think that was like the last conversation we had before we reconnected. I did get to see him at Slapshot, so that made me happy.
Yeah. I was telling Trisha about, you know, him passing away and stuff, and she was like, you know, she's like, I'm super sad that your friend passed away. And she's like, who is he? Like, and I was telling her, you know, who he was and stuff, and she's like, oh, I think I remember you, you know, hearing you talk about him on occasion. And I was telling her about Hate Beak, and she was just like, what the fuck? She was like, she's like, you have that record? I was like, yeah. She's like, I want you to play that for me. She's like, I gotta know like what that sounds like. And I was like, yeah, like, honestly, I was like, that to me just sums up so perfectly like who he was. Like, to have the mind of a person who just is on the forefront of creating like animal hardcore. Like I know there was people that did like the dog barking record or whatever. That may have been first, but I feel pretty confident that the Hate Beak was probably the first avian like hardcore metal record ever produced.
Awesome.
Like, how cool is that? Like, literally, like, that dude like created, like, helped like forge and create like an actual genre of music. Like, who else can really say that? Like, not many people can say that. And you know, it's funny, I was thinking, I made that post about him on the Potty Mouth Instagram, because I found those couple pictures of him at some Bomb Threat shows early on. And I'm assuming those are shows you guys probably played with us.
I think so.
Unless think you just rolled up to hang out or whatever. But
and that's very possible
too. I actually remember the very, very, very first time meeting him was down in Baltimore. I came down to hang out with you guys some weekend, and I don't remember whose house it was, but we were in some neighborhood, like kind of like suburbs type neighborhood, but it was sort of like a very, from what I can recall, it was like a 60s, 70s era neighborhood, like very affluent. And I remember the house was like really nice. It wasn't quite to this level of design aesthetic, but it had like a vibe to me from what I remember of like the Ferris Bueller's Day Off house where like Cameron lives, where the house right. or the car like drives out of the garage. it didn't like really look like that house, but I just remember something about it gave me that vibe. Like it was like a modern.
I wonder if we went to Greg's, which was the fill-in bass player for the P-Tanks, like after.
Okay. I do remember whoever lived there did have an affiliation with the P-Tanks.
Then we probably went to Greg's. I would not know what we were doing there, but very possibly.
Well, I think we went there to pick up Blake.
Oh,
well, and I don't know if Blake was living there or if he was just hanging out, but I remember us going to this house, and that was the very first time I met Blake. And I just definitely remember. I don't know. It's weird. Like we've kind of talked about this before, just like when I was younger and like meeting new people, it was always like a little bit nerve wracking to me. Cause it was, even though you're going to like hang out with people with similar interest in music or whatever, there's always still like an anxiety of, even though we're in the same sort of like peer group right now by hanging out, there's still always that level of like, someone might not like you, even though you have these common interests kind of a thing.
Right. Right.
And I just remember from the very beginning, like kind of like hitting it off with him, and just that dude had like no reason to be cool to a stranger other than he was just like a cool person. And like, I always felt super accepted by him, like immediately. And I always thought he was like really fucking cool. So the fact that he was so cool and just like welcoming me into the circle, I guess, like, I don't know. That said a lot about, I think, who he was as a person.
Yeah. And I think you summed up a lot of the posts that you actually, I mean, that were done about him. Like I think he was friends. I don't know how he was friends with Tom, who was the drummer for 710 Split, but I did suck at guitar, at least that style, what we were doing. And so Blake, I guess we brought him in. I don't even know why, or he was hanging out with Tom and we were like, yeah, he's cool. He can play with us. Like it was definitely like, I don't remember us wanting a second guitar player, but bringing on him was definitely definitely helped me out a lot in it. You know, kind of diversified how we played, which was cool. I mean, everybody was into the fucking all right, I'm starting to learn what the post-hardcore is after I asked Gavin and Zach and didn't know, but like the melodic, you know, riff over top of riff, we did a lot of that, so it was fun. And he and I hit it off much more so than like the other guys in the band. Well, besides Fred doesn't count. Fred's my boyfriend, so he's totally doesn't count. But like the other guys in the band, like it was like Blake and I were like fucking fire as soon as it started. Yeah. Like we were just kindred spirits.
And he was really good at guitar too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how. He did that in Daybreak as well as in our band. And
like, I don't know what his upbringing on playing guitar was, and like when he started, and what his background for learning was, but
I think he was in a band before ours called Frotis. It was like one of his band, and I think he was in that with, can't remember. I'm not gonna start throwing names around because I'll fall apart.
But I feel like just watching him back then, he was at a level that I don't know. He had a speed and intensity when he played that like I hadn't really seen in person up until that point. Like, I mean, we grew up around a lot of really good guitar players, but he had a very unique style of playing that I hadn't seen until I met him. I think he picked really fast and he could move around the neck really fast.
He definitely picked faster than I did, which is not fucking hard.
He could Ramones pick basically, but like really, really fast. And then like, dude, like the shit if you listen to that Daybreak stuff, I mean, the guitar playing on that shit, it's like no fucking joke. Like, it's legitimate, like fast as fuck, like early Napalm Death kind of fucking playing. It's like you have to be really, really fucking good to play the shit they were playing.
Yeah, it was kindred spirits. I was trying to find, I was like, Gavin, where are our old photos? He's like, yeah, I think they're in the basement. I'm like, yes. Because I was going to send some, because I know I have a bunch with like him and I getting ripped at different places, yeah, and us drawing all over him.
Nice. Well, then I posted, the other thing I posted too was like that memory I had of that show. And I don't remember, like, someone in the band might have a better recollection of this than I do, but I think we were in I think Bomb Threat was in Baltimore to play a show. And I don't know if we were playing with Daybreak or just Blake happened to be there. I don't remember, but I remember Blake and I out in the parking lot. It was nighttime. And I remember that dude, that wrestler dude, that Vortex guy, fucking showing up.
I can't remember his name because I keep getting it wrong on who I think it is, and it's not who I think it is.
Yeah.
But yes.
Yeah, the Vortex.
But I can't remember his real name.
Well, I don't think I ever knew it even back then, because I think that I think Blake knew who he was. But it was like a whole voice. Joke of like Blake would not like reveal who he was. Like that was part of like the gimmick. But I remember that dude showing up and just like going berserker in that parking lot. Like he was like throwing shit and like getting on top of cars and like screaming at people and stuff. And like, I'm pretty sure that I have like an old, like Super 8 tape from one of my old camcorders of filming that dude in that parking lot that night. I'll have to try to like dig out sometime, but,
Yeah,
that shit was hilarious. And that, I just remember that was like a very burned in my brain memory of hanging out with Blake like that night when the Vortex fucking showed up. Yeah, I feel it's funny because like I feel like we knew him in like the innocent years phase of his life, so to speak, and then he just like went on to,
I inserted an eye roll right there.
Yeah, but, yes, but then he just went on to do like really cool like high level shit. And I mean, sort of in a way, like a little bit became like a rock star, I guess.
Dude, I think he was well loved. He met what was he telling me about? Like when we were talking at Slapshot, because I got him into Integrity. And then he met DeWid and they're like, DeWid posted something about his passing. Like there's just like, he, like, every band we were into, he had played with and made friends with. Like, it was amazing. Because he's the one that got me into the door. So to see them actually post up and post a picture of him, you know, and kind of recognize him, I think is awesome. And it just, I think, goes to show, like, his love and commitment to our music.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think it goes back to what I was saying. Like, the first time I met him, I think that just echoes with what you're saying with all these, like, bigger name people who posted about him passing. Like literally anybody who met that dude was, you'd have to be a complete dick to, like, not think that dude was cool when you meet him, so.
Yeah. Well, it was funny is, so Gene had texted us that he had passed. And I guess that put it on Gavin's radar. And when we got home from, we basically got home from practice about the same time, but they actually practiced, unlike us. he's like, dude, he's like, your friend, he was popular. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, there's posts all over the place about him. I'm like, yeah, he's a really good guy. So it was good to see that he was acknowledged, you know?
Yeah, man.
One could only hope that you're that loved when you pass.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of I feel like that's like the secret sauce of life, is that you want to do your best to live your life in a way that when you're gone, like, it's hard for you to actually be gone because people are like constantly thinking about you.
Yeah. All right. This is way too heavy. I'm giving you this. Wait. There we go. We need to change the vibe here. I'm making me all sad.
It's unfortunately in my storage right now, but I will definitely be making a special trip down there in the next like couple weekends to dig out the Hatebeak 7-inch, because I need to have that here in the house to, because I have my Daybreak stuff so here at the house, and like I feel like every record that I own with him on, I feel like has to like be in the house now. It's like a rule.
Yeah.
Like, the Hatebeak's got to be here.
Yeah, I guess I should rock out the Perestroika, put it on the old jukebox and let it roll.
I think I still have a copy of that. I'm pretty sure I do. I have this recollection that I definitely have that record, but then there's also a recollection that I wanted it and never actually got a copy for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah. I remember you definitely not being stoked on it back in the day.
But I mean, I'll take it. If that's what I am memorialized with, then
I'm
sure. But if that's my tie, I'll take it. It was worth it. All right, I'm shifting gears on you. Love you, Blake. Did you listen to the remaster of Fixation on
Killer? No, I have not heard that.
So after we had our podcast, and Andy was talking about it, and I had read something else about like the mix in it, I went and I listened to it the whole way to practice to go get Fred, because I do a loop and I drive to Baltimore, pick up Fred, and then we go from Fred's house to Keedysville. So I have to tell you, it's the same but different.
Okay.
I think the wall of sound that's achieved with the original, like, it's not there. Like, it's taken... They've added in some depth to like the mid and high tones to me. Like there's stuff that I don't think I'd ever heard before in the mix that's there now. And it's I was kind of torn on whether I like it or not. I mean, it doesn't take away from the record. I don't think it's the same punch in the face that the original mix was. But I think what it does do is add even more complexity and depth to what Andy was talking about during the pod, like the guitar work and stuff like that it's clearer now and more defined. And so it changes the tone of the record, and they should not have put those three songs in the middle. That fucks it all up.
I hate that. But, part of it. I haven't heard that, but just listening to you guys talk about it, I already knew that I was not going to like that.
Yeah, it fucks the vibe up of the record. And like you said, they didn't do anything to those songs. So I mean, it doesn't even flow perfectly together as like a package, because I don't think the tonation and stuff is the same. But the overall, I mean, it's still a really good record. And if I'd heard this one first and heard this one, if we had to swap places, you would go, ooh, it's a little, maybe the original is a little bit more, I'm going to say muddy. I don't think that's the right word, but it's a little bit, this new version, like the midtones and highs are clearer. And so you can hear a lot more, like tonality of the guitars. Wow. I'm really getting deep on this. Like, I feel like I cheated myself by not listening to that version before having that conversation. But with that being said, it was something old, something new. So honestly, we should have compared both records versus bringing in Scowl into the mix, because there was enough difference between the two records that it totally, there was a discussion to be had there.
I definitely would like to hear the updated version just so I could like A and B them together. I kind of feel like what I talked about when we did the podcast was that the original, to me, it does now sound a little thin, but it's a great recording, but it just sounds to me, it's a little thin. Like it's like not quite as heavy as maybe it should be. But I also think that that's exactly what that record needed to have at the time to make it what it was. Like, if they would have recorded that in a way right. that was more traditional at the time and like heavier, it wouldn't have stood
like bottom end.
Yeah, heavy. Like it wouldn't have stood out with the guitar playing. Like, because the guitar playing and the drumming, I think, is really what made that record so original sounding. And I think if it would have been recorded in a heavier way, it would have not. This is a horrible way to describe that record, but it wouldn't have been as like mathy sounding as what mm-hmm. it is.
Yeah. And I think like this recording even, or this remix adds that layer of math to it.
Oh, like
adds like another even layer more, to okay. it. Yeah. Like there's riffs that are running in there that I never heard before. And like I've listened to this album a million fucking times, the original a million mm-hmm. fucking times. Like, it was one of my favorites. And yes, I know Sleeping with Quintet or whatever, the Quintet's better, but I've listened to this one a million times as well. And like there's especially in the first was it Makeshift Atom Maker? Or is that the first song? Like, there's stuff going on in that song that I never heard. Like, it is, whether my audio system was that poor at the time, which I don't think it was. No, it wasn't. Like, because I would have listened to my car in the GT. I had like an uber pimped out fucking stereo in it. Like, it should have been stuff that should have been noticeable that this remix has kind of brought to the foreground.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued now. I guess, can I listen to that like online somewhere?
You should be able to listen to it on, I would assume that because you do everything through YouTube, I bet you it's there as well. Because on iTunes, you can listen to the original or you can listen to the remix. And I did both. Like, I did do them both.
Yeah.
And F you, Gavin, the original is only 30 minutes long, so it's not that long. Extra three songs makes it longer, but it's still, I went and listened to it multiple times on the way to get Fred. Cause I was just like, yeah, this is different. It was, that's what kind of caught me off guard, was that it wasn't, you know how sometimes they really fuck stuff up with the remix. It wasn't that they fucked it up. It was more of, there was a cleanliness to it that I wasn't expecting. I mean, I keep trying to think of the dude, the old school record producer did the Wall sound. Like, that's what I feel. What's his name? He's in jail for murder, so it's really not important right now. But Phil Spector, yeah, but he's in jail now, so it doesn't matter. But he had like, that was always like the in your face. And this recording is, It's a little pulled back, but there's so much detail in it now. If that makes sense. Less in your faceness, more detail. To experience your face.
Give that a little spin and I'll report back if I agree with your sentiments.
Well, please do.
Another record that just came out I thought might be relevant to talk about. I haven't heard it yet. I don't know if you have either, so maybe if neither one of us have heard it, we can listen to it and review it next time. But the Circle Jerks and Descendants did that split 7-inch where they do each other's songs.
I have not listened to it yet. I saw the cover art for it.
Cool. Well, then, yeah, let's listen to that, and then next week we can chat about it. Because I do know that the Descendants do Red Tape, I Just Want Some Skank in Beverly Hills, and the Circle Jerks do Kabuki Girl and Hope.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, that's definitely, we're in. That'll be our something new segment, even though it's not so new, but it covers both categories.
Yeah, it could. There's sort of like a trailer video for the record that I did see on YouTube. That's actually pretty cool. It's worth checking out. It's shows like Milo walking down the street, and it shows Keith Morris walking down the street, and they both have like a little like Walkman kind of thing. And then they like bump into each other and like the tapes like
collide. Oh, I think I've seen it. Yes. Yes. I think I've seen it. it's playing off of the what the fuck was it? The Reese's Peanut Butter Cup commercials
from the 80s. I think you're right.
It's awesome.
Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to talk about, I had so much hope for this to be really cool, and it honestly ended up being like pretty disappointing. But 2 weekends ago, we went to see Madonna up in LA, and I was thoroughly disappointed by her show. Like the, well, first of all, like I'll say the positives of the show was it was really cool to see her. She, people talk a lot of shit on her and stuff, but like, honestly, she still does put on like a really good show. Like she's, I know she's like 65 or whatever, but she was fucking strutting around stage like she is not 65. Like she still got moves and she still got cardio. So I'll give it to her. Like she can fucking dance and she can fucking strut around the stage and put on a performance. And like all the dancing and all the choreography, like it was all impressive. Like I've honestly never seen a show like a pop show of that magnitude before. So like, it was pretty cool from that aspect. However, I don't know exactly why she did this, but when you think of like all the hits that she has, like there's probably, you can probably think of like two or three songs right off the top of your head that are songs you're familiar with. But then when you really like go and listen to like a greatest hits of hers, you're like, oh fuck, she has like 15 fucking songs I know that are like all bangers, like if you like her at all. So
right
at the show, I kind of thought, because it was like a 40th anniversary thing, it's like the 40th, you know, like celebration of 40 years of Madonna or whatnot, so I just assumed we're gonna get like banger after banger after banger of like hits. Well,
one more,
she did not do that at all, and every song that she played that was a song that everyone kind of knows and like would want to hear, she either did like a stripped down shortened version of it or did like a medley version of it, like with some other hit song that were like smashed together, or she did like an acoustic guitar version of a song that would normally be like rocking and dancing, and it was like a slowed down version. So right.
Did she mash them in with her new songs, or was it like old song to old song? Like I was just trying to see if it, or trying to think through, like, was it a ploy to get you into this new song?
No, not really. I mean, she definitely played way more new stuff and like late 90s, early 2000s era stuff that people know. I mean, like I even recognized one or two of those songs, but out of the like spectrum of, like I said, those like 15 banger hits that everyone wants to hear, she played like three or four of those, and only like one of those was played in its entirety, and the other ones were like shortened versions or acoustic version. So it was right. Just like, it was honestly, it was extremely disappointing. Like I was hoping to just hear, like I wanted to, what I thought my Madonna experience was going to be was like reliving like all the 80s and early 90s hits just back to back to back. And it was not that at all.
Really? Yeah. That's kind of,
yeah, lame. It was super lame.
Especially if you're celebrating 40 years. Like I think there needs to be acknowledgement of like, that's why we're here, is to see that. It's not the Dancy Boom Bancy tour. It's like, we're celebrating
40 years. Yeah. It was almost like more.
So yeah. It's kind of lame.
More that she, it's like, let me prove to you that even though I'm 65, I still have amazing cardio, then I want you to hear the songs you like.
Nice. Got it, people. Yeah. Whatever.
So anyway, that was a bummer.
I'm giving you this.
Exactly.
That is not,
that's cool. How I felt. I actually, what you really need is the you lost the game on the Price is Right sound effect. Need to add that in there.
Yeah, I'll have to find that one. That'll be magical.
Yeah, you love Schnarf so much, you should put Schnarf's voice on one of your keys.
No, no. Fuck that, dude. I'm not even doing it. Yeah, he was horrible. He ruined it. I think I was sick one day. We must have had the shit at like the video store or something, like episodes. And I think I just like ran through like a whole season or the whole storyline one day. I was like, it was very awesome. So it's funny to go back to the Thundercats, but they were badass.
Full circle, man.
Yeah. All right. So let's wrap this shit up, fucker. All right. So adios from planet Uranus or wherever we're at.
Thundera. That's where the Thundercats were from, right?
Yeah. Yes. Did you watch Battle for the Planet or Battle of the Planets? Like, that was one, I think it was on 20. And they would, it was like they had the bird helmets. It was like Japanimation.
Like, yeah. I do remember that.
Do you remember that?
Wow, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Like, there's people that talk about it. I'm like, I don't remember it. I don't think the U.S. name is the same as, like, the Japanimation name. Like, I don't think that they match.
Wow, dude. Core memory unlocked with that. I definitely watched that. I don't remember having toys or anything of that show, but...
No. Uh-uh. Like, I remember there were, like, five of them. It's kind of like Voltron.
I was going to say, like, that was almost like a precursor to Voltron, because even their suits looked like the Voltron pilot suits.
Yeah, yeah. I think they had, like, a girl, and then big oofy guy, and then, like, some shaggy-looking dude, and then, like, two other ones. Yeah, I think there are five of them. Could be wrong. It might have only been four, but same five. Anyway, what a great sidetrack
to wrap it up.
Look at you. He is stunned,
everybody. I'm so stunned. I'm actually going to go try to find that and watch that today. That's amazing. Thank you for bringing that up.
I know. You have to let me know how it holds up.
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is listen to that Dead Guy reissue or remaster.
Listen to that. I think, well, besides Johnny Quest, maybe some of the, stereotypes me a little bit crazy. That one still holds up. So that is a cartoon that after divorce, I still could watch. Like, Johnny Quest holds up. But now I'm going to have to look and see if there's anything else that I can handle. Anyway, total sidetrack. Cool. Adios, motherfuckers.
See you guys next time.
This podcast was brought to you by Potty Mouth Records. Contact us at pottymouthrecords@gmail.com and find us on the web at pottymouthrecords.rocks. That's .rocks.
That was way better than I thought.
Get a life, bunch of friends, and I love Frank guys!
Love you. Love your dad.
POTYCAST. Ba-da.